That's deep to right field. Garcia is back and gone. Alex Gordon. Alex Gordon has driven in four tonight. He had a two-run double back in the third inning. He has walked and scored, and now he hits a two-run blast to right, and the Royals' lead is 10-1.
The elder statesman last night getting in the show and getting his name known. Alex Gordon had four RBI last night as the Royals won over the White Sox 10-5. White Sox led 1-0 in the first after a solo home run by Yoan Moncada. But from there, the Royals scored 10 straight runs. Gordon had a two RBI double in the third. O'Hearn had a single RBI in the fourth for a 3-1 lead. Scored five in the fifth. Whit Merrifield scored on an error. Lucas Duda had an RBI single. Rosel Herrera followed with an RBI ground rule double. Brett Phillips would bring in Duda, and then Herrera scored on a pass ball. They led 8-1 after five, and then the two-run home run, that you heard right there from Alex Gordon gave the Royals the 10-1 lead. White Sox would score four more runs, but just not enough, man. I actually wasn't watching the game last night, but obviously, look, you go back, watch the highlights and everything like that, but I get alerts on my phone every time there's a scoring play in a Royals game, and so I had went and done something, came back to my phone, and there was like six alerts on there, and they were all plays by the Royals that scored. I'm like, oh, they got to be up like 10-1 right now. Sure enough, they were up 10-1 and ended up winning at 10-5. An offensive explosion for the Royals last night. The young guns are 7-5 since the All-Star break now, and here's Ned Yost on the way his offense has been performing.
Gordy, you know, good at bats. I thought the two kids, Phillips and O'Hearn, had really good at bats. I thought they had really good at bats. I just like the way we're swinging the bats right now.
I think Ned's almost at a loss for words. He's like surprised that the offense is playing as well as it has been here at times over the last 12 games. Again, they're now 2-0 in this series, so they've guaranteed a win in the series, which has not been the case most of the year for the Royals. They've been struggling, but they pick up the win last night over the White Sox and have a chance to sweep them, which would be they have a chance for their second sweep of the season. And both of them would be after the All-Star break. They got the sweep over the Twins coming out of the All-Star break, and now they have a chance to sweep Chicago in Chicago, Guaranteed Rate Field, this afternoon at 1:10 from Guaranteed Rate Field as the first pitch. I will warn everybody, when you hear my sportscast at 5 o'clock tonight, I will not have an update on the Royals 1:10 game this afternoon because I will be out of here. I have a family obligation that I need to be at by 5 o'clock here tonight. So that game, it's in haze. So I won't have time to catch the Royals and get that in my sportscast. So if you're like, why is he still talking about yesterday's game in the sports? So that's why. So I just wanted to warn everybody. So I didn't look like a fool talking about, hey, first pitch is 1:10 for today's game, and I don't have anything on there about it. So there's your warning for today. 1:10 this afternoon, Brad Keller's 4-4 with a 3.43 ERA for the Royals against Reynaldo Lopez. The White Sox is 4-9 with a 4.57 ERA. Royals are now 34-73. The White Sox fall to 37-70. So here we go. If we can get the sweep, things are going to get interesting at the bottom of the division. Royals are now just three games behind. So if they win today, they'd be two games behind the White Sox for the number four spot in the AL Central. And I don't think that they'll overtake anybody else. Detroit's not having a great year, but they're still currently 12 games ahead of the Royals at 47-62. Twins are 49-58. The AL Central really hasn't been the best division.
Yeah.
For 2 years in a row, they had, obviously, the AL representative was from the AL Central when the Royals played in 3 years in a row, I should say, when the Royals played in 14. They didn't even win the division that year. The Tigers did, and then the Royals won it in 15. Indians won it in 16, went 6-7 games with the Cubs, didn't win it. But, you know, a lot of times underneath that, ever since 2014, the division has not been, like, the best. We can go back to the standings and look at them. Like 2015, the Royals won by 12 games, and the Twins were 83-79. And then in last 2016, it was an 8-game win for the Indians, as the Tigers were 86-75 in second place. And then last year, it was kind of similar to this year, where the Indians just kind of ran away with it. They had that big long winning streak last year and ended up 102-60. Mm-hmm. Didn't make it to where they wanted to, and the in the playoffs. But the Twins had a decent year last year, 85-77. But you know, the Royals are 80-82. It's not consistently been a real good, strong top to bottom division like some of the other ones. The NL West seems to be like year in, year out, one of the strongest top to bottom divisions where everybody's competing, and that's the case this year again, as we talked about yesterday. But the Royals right now are in last, still in the AL Central, but they're fighting their way up toward fourth. Again, there's three games behind the White Sox after the win yesterday. It'd be interesting to see how it all pans out as far as the top of the division leaders, and like we were talking about in the National League yesterday, but not so much in the American League. The Dodgers, by the way, are now tied for first again with the Diamondbacks at 60-49 in the NL West. Rockies are a game back in third place, and the Giants are five games back in fourth place. So as we said, that's pretty much the most competitive division. The Cubs are in first place in the Central by a game over the Brewers. The Phillies half a game lead now on the Braves for first place in the National League East. The Nationals won again, so they're up above 500 again in the NL East. And then the AL East, the Red Sox in first, 5.5 games ahead of the Yankees. Cleveland first, like I said, 10 games ahead of the Twins. And the Astros are in first, 5 games ahead of Seattle and Oakland, who are basically, they're tied for second, but by a thousandth of a percentage point at 63-45 instead of 64-46. The Mariners just barely ahead of the A's right now by that smallest of 1,000th of a percentage point there in the AL West. So kind of an update on what's going on in Major League Baseball. Again, the Royals and White Sox this afternoon at 1:10 in Chicago. We have some bad news. And I would say bad news if you're an Ohio State football fan. Bad news if you're just a fan of people doing the right thing.
Okay.
Ohio State head coach Urban Meyer was placed on paid administrative leave on Wednesday as the school announced it is investigating Courtney Smith's claims that several people close to the coach knew of the 2015 allegation of domestic violence against her ex-husband, former Ohio State football assistant coach Zach Smith, who was fired in July. I'm reading this from an ESPN story. I need to say that so I don't get plagiarism here or anything like that. But I'm just kind of reading this because I haven't had time to go over all of it. But this is what went down. Offensive coordinator Ryan Day, by the way, will be the team's acting head coach during the investigation. Ohio State said in a statement, quote, "We are focused on supporting our players and getting to the truth as expeditiously as possible," unquote. You got to have, you know, you're an institution like Ohio State, you got to make big words.
Expeditiously.
Let's expedite it. Expeditiously. They're trying to get it done quick. Courtney Smith, the wife of, ex-wife, I should say, of, again, Zach Smith, the former assistant football coach. Again, he was fired in July. She told college football reporter Brett McMurphy of ESPN her allegations in a story posted on his Facebook page earlier Wednesday. And it says all the coaches' wives knew. They all did, every single one. So Smith told Stadium and Platform Sports Network that she believes Meyer also knew at the time. She said, "I do believe he knew, and instead he chose to help the abuser and enable the abuser and believe whatever story Zach was telling everybody. Ohio State opens practice on Friday, and athletic director Gene Smith and I agree that being on leave during this inquiry will facilitate its completion. This allows the team to conduct training camp with minimal distraction. I eagerly look forward to the resolution of this matter." That's what Urban Meyer said in a statement. Meyer's contract extension that he signed in April includes language requiring him to report any violations by staff members of Ohio State's sexual misconduct policy to the university's athletics Title IX coordinator. Also, as an Ohio State employee who supervises others, Meyer is required by the university's sexual misconduct policy to report knowledge of domestic abuse by a university employee, according to the policy. An individual need not be charged or convicted of a criminal offense to be found responsible for domestic violence pursuant to this policy. So, apparently, Urban Meyer knew about all this and just let it go, didn't report it, and then eventually it came out, the allegations came out against the former assistant coach, Zach Smith. So he's on administrative leave. Would you not think, like, after everything that went down at Penn State and now after everything that's gone down at Baylor, would you not just kind of like, we got to be on top of these things, man. If we know about it, we got to tell people about it. You're complicit there. Obviously, you're an accomplice if you know about these things.
Yeah.
And
absolutely
not report them. I mean, you're mandated in Kansas. You're a mandated state reporter, whether you know it or not. If you find out something, of any kind of domestic abuse, child abuse, these kind of things, mm-hmm. you are required by law. You yep. are a reporter. Once you figure that out, you need to report that.
And if you're not, you're
the only reason I know that is because we get told that all the time in our orientation as summer camp counselors.
Right.
Like, you know, not every single kid is going to come from a perfect home, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be things that happen.
Right.
So if we see something, if we hear them say something, if they say something to us, we are mandated to report mm-hmm. that to somebody, and we're not supposed to report it to our camp director. We're supposed to report that to the law enforcement.
Right. Right.
You say, hey, I need a phone. I need to call the law.
Right.
And they give you numbers that it's Kansas Sunflower Services who comes in and tells us all that. So they give you a number to, mm-hmm. to call there and report that.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure that goes with any kind of stuff that you hear. Maybe it's obviously amplified with child
right.
Abuse and investigations and things right. like that, but and allegations. But you are mandated to report that stuff. So everything that's gone down in college football, and not just football, but you have two very prime examples in Penn State mm-hmm. and Baylor. And they're both they're two separate situations. Penn State is a
right.
child thing. Baylor's what should be consenting adults that are not consenting. And it is adults, though. They're all in college. They're past 18 for the majority of those people. So Baylor's another example of all the allegations and everything that's happened. I can't sit here and you can't defend anybody that tries to hide this stuff, that doesn't report it if they know about it.
No, and the other thing outside of those cases, like you talked about with Penn State and Baylor, Urban Meyer has a history going back to Florida of claiming to have his head in the sand in a lot of scenarios. And situations where there were players involved in certain activities. I'm not saying that they're all, you know, domestic violence related or sexual abuse related, but, you know, 31 players from his different teams were arrested over a 3-year period. And there's like all but three of them he claimed he didn't know anything about.
Yeah.
You know, and then when the heat got down and it got hot, then he retired for 15 minutes and then unretired and then left and went to ESPN for a year and then landed at Ohio State.
Yeah.
After he left Utah to take the Florida job, you know, and that's the other thing that the Myers got working against him here is he's kind of claimed this ignorance before that I didn't realize this was going on. I didn't know anything about this. You know, it falls flat after a while.
Yeah.
There comes a point that you have to realize, okay, if you really weren't aware of this stuff, you need to make more of an effort to keep yourself in the loop and be knowledgeable of what's going on within your program and what the people in your program have going on outside of the program that could potentially negatively influence said program.
Exactly.
It's really not complicated. And we're talking about a guy here that's got a history now of claiming after the fact when these things come up of not knowing anything about it and having a head in the sand. And eventually you've got to, you know, pull your head out, so to speak, and look around. And ignorance isn't that what they say? You know, ignorance is no excuse when it comes to breaking the law.
Yeah.
You know, not knowing law is not a cop out for breaking it.
It's not a legit reason for doing
something. It's like the old days, I didn't know I couldn't do that.
Yeah. I didn't know I couldn't do that. It was good, wasn't it, Dave?
Right.
People are like, what are they talking about? Watch some Dave Chappelle from the 90s with his stand-up comedy.
I didn't know I couldn't do that.
Chip, no.
No, Chip.
Okay, we'll move on because nobody understands what we're talking about right now. But if there's anything, and I'm not trying to make this comedy or light of the situation with Urban Meyer, but there is something that kind of, it's irony is what you'd call it. You remember the campaign that Nike had back in the late 80s with Bo Jackson?
Oh,
Bo
yeah.
Knows.
Sure.
Nike, it gets better because Nike, obviously you can't use likenesses of players, but you can use likenesses of coaches on shirts and whatever you want to print for Nike. So Nike, and I don't remember when they did this, I think it was a few years back, well, they made shirts with the coaches' names on them. And underneath it says Knows.
Oh.
Nike has an Ohio State t-shirt that says Urban Meyer Knows. And that thing was selling like hotcakes yesterday.
Oh,
people were finding it anywhere they could. Fanatics said it's unavailable now on their website. It's either sold out or they pulled it because they didn't want it to keep going out. And Nike probably said, okay, pull this off your platforms. But they had these shirts that were made that say, I'm sure there's one that says,
Does Ohio State have a deal with Nike, or who do they?
Yeah, their apparel deals Nike. They wear Nike.
Well, then I wouldn't be surprised to see Nike want to pull it. If it was somebody else, I could see them all sell.
Yeah. So Nike makes the shirts, and they're the apparel provider for Ohio State. So you don't want to make light of the situation and laugh,
no.
But that is irony. There's no doubt about that. And you have the shirt that says Urban Meyer knows, and now there's going to be people that aren't even Ohio State fans. I mean, there's probably going to be people like Michigan fans wearing this Ohio State shirt that says Urban Meyer knows, because it's not about the color anymore. Right. It's not about the rivalry. It's not about Ohio State saying Urban Meyer's a good coach. He knows. It's about Urban Meyer knows about this assault that happened and domestic violence abuse and everything like that. So, yeah, it was interesting to say the least. Sometimes things can come back and backfire on you, and Urban Meyer knows T-shirt. They're selling like hotcakes.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure they are. You know, and that's the thing with me. You know, I can separate, like, an issue like that, it's a serious issue, but I can separate the serious issue from the funny aspect of irony in the shirts, you know, kind of like, you know, I can still enjoy Michael Jackson's music despite some of the allegations that came down against him. I can separate those from one another.
And that's what we were talking about yesterday, like with politics and sports too, you know, what the coaches are saying about this guy or that guy. Don't care what he's saying. Say what you're saying, dude. I don't care. I'm in here because I want to watch sports. I want my team to do even. You can separate a lot of things in life from what's going on. I had a discussion one time with not the previous news director, but the one before, Dan, with Mike. And we were talking one day about Michael Jordan and how, if he's a role model or not and things like that. And he said, you just can't separate the off-the-court, the gambling issues and all that stuff when you say you want to be like Mike. And I'm like, yeah, you can. I never once wanted to be like Mike as a person. I wanted to be like Mike as a player.
Right.
It's not hard to separate all that.
As a winner.
I don't want to be,
right.
You know, I don't want to be like Urban Meyer as a terrible human being. I want to be like Urban Meyer as a coach.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't want to make fun of what happened in this situation, make light of it, but I can still laugh about a T-shirt that says Urban Meyer knows.
Right. It'd be like a kid growing up in the 80s that wanted to be a running back like O.J. Simpson. That didn't mean he's going to grow up and chop up his ex-wife and his boyfriend.
Yeah.
And her boyfriend, yeah.
Yeah, it was like, because that guy was beloved. Everybody wanted to be O.J.
On the bad and the good. It goes along the same, just like we talked about yesterday. You know, the fact that LeBron James opened up this school in Cleveland is making this incredible offer to all these kids and these families in that area of the city doesn't have anything to do with what kind of basketball player he is.
No, exactly.
Any more than, you know, any of this other stuff, the negative stuff, necessarily has anything to do with how good a coach somebody is or how good of a player somebody is. And it just, people want to bundle them all together and make them one and the same, and they're just not.
Yeah, exactly. So
does that come into play with the entire makeup of a person overall? Yeah. But, you know, you're not all necessarily the same person sitting here behind the microphone that you might be when you go see your family tonight.
Yeah.
Or when I go home this evening, you know, or I may not, you know, there may be some differences that maybe some things might be that wouldn't come out over the radio, you know,
because if people hang around us, you know, off the air,
right,
they're gonna be like, oh, there were some words that came out of his mouth that I wasn't expecting to hear.
Right. Yeah.
You know, just see things, even things like that, you know,
yeah.
I mean, there's differences of there's things that we're restricted to do while this microphone is open. So obviously that's going to make a difference too. So again, you can separate yourselves from the difference. I'm going to talk a little bit more about Jordan here just momentarily. I wasn't planning on it, but I kind of got to remembering what I saw yesterday from a kid that grew up in Chicago that kind of knows a little bit about the charity work that Jordan's done during his career. And it's funny because, and again, Urban Meyer's on administrative leave right now. We'll see how that all comes out and how it all goes with that. Here's the funny thing, though, about what we see in media and what they're going to pump, what they're going to talk about, And I've got two examples, and the only reason I do this is because I knew at some point you'd see these people that are saying LeBron's better than Michael because he's a better person. You know, he did this and that. First, I'm going to talk about one thing that hasn't been. It just happened yesterday, but it's not as big of a deal that we're seeing on Twitter, that we're seeing on ESPN. Had the LeBron James I Promise School all over, plastered on their website. It was one of the top stories. You could go to the ESPN website, click a link right at the top. It would show you everything you need to know about the I Promise School.
Yeah.
Okay, so Derrick Rose is doing some good things right now, too. And this didn't show up on ESPN. You don't know anything about it.
Nope.
It didn't show up on a lot of platforms yesterday, but Minnesota Timberwolves guard Derrick Rose announced he started a college scholarship program, which he will award more than $400,000 in tuition money.
Right on.
And you can learn more about it. It's called RoseScholars.com is the website that he's got. And it says, passionate about embodying a legacy that will empower the next generation to pursue greatness, NBA star Derrick Rose has launched a scholarship program called the Rose Scholars, kind of a play on Rhodes Scholars, I would guess, but it's the Rose Scholars. Program is open to high school sophomore, junior, and senior students who are civically minded and have an instinct to lead. He's gifting one grand prize winner up to $200,000, paid out $25,000 per semester for 4 years, plus two smaller winners for up to $20,000, paid out fall 2018, a one-time payment. And it says, please read the fine print game rules that says the student will actually have to spend the money on college, university-related expenses. That's normal when you get a scholarship. They want to know that you're not going, like, you get your loan check, cash it, and go to the liquor store. I know some people that did that, or they go buy a PlayStation or something. You know, they get their loan check, they go buy a video game or a computer or something with it, you know. And it says, be creative, put in some work, chase dreams, change the world, make it better. Hashtag Rose Scholars 2018. Applications are due by September 30th, 2018. RoseScholars.com. I don't know if that's available to anybody in the country, but there's a scholarship right there where Derrick Rose has invested $400,000 of his own money for tuition money. And so, but we're not seeing that. And my question is why? Like, why? Oh, why isn't that all over ESPN's website? Like, why can't I go to ESPN? Because I went last night and this morning, and there's no link here on their front page. Now, if I go to the NBA page, nothing. There's no, on a main story, even on the NBA part of the ESPN website, there's not a story right there that has this. Wade will decide on 16th season in due time. LeBron, new LA teammates share hoops love. NBA now first U.S. league with betting sponsor. Bucks Wade Jennings. Free agent Nwamba commits to Cavaliers. McMillan agrees to Pacers extension.
All right.
I mean, those first, the last three that I read are actually the first three. I went bottom to top.
Reverse order.
But, I mean, the first three are probably important. NBA has a betting sponsor, which, by the way, is MGM Resorts. And because they've changed kind of all the rules there within how you can gamble in sports now, and some things have been changed. But yeah, it's not even on the NBA page on ESPN. So like, it's like, what do you? There was probably three stories about LeBron's school, which it's a great thing. Like we talked about, I'm not trying to tear down LeBron here at all.
Right.
Because what he did is great, and what he's doing is great. There's no question about it. But here's from a guy that I went to college with in Colby, and yeah, you kind of keep in touch with him. He actually ended up playing a lot of years of professional ball over in Europe and Japan, and he grew up in Chicago. And he said, I didn't want to do this, but I guess I will. All I've seen the last few days, LeBron versus Jordan, as far as charity. Charity. We're talking a charity competition. So he's talking about, you know, the economics of the difference of LeBron right now and how much money he's made at this point in his life compared to what Jordan did. He didn't have the multimillion-dollar shoe deal right out of high school.
No.
You know, he didn't have that $90 million that he got from Nike before he even stepped on the floor. So it's a little bit different, but... He said, you know, he donated his entire Wizards salary to the 9/11 victims. He's like, but let's rewind 20 years ago to 96. Jordan and Bulls constructed James Jordan BGC in the hood. This is him saying this and not me. And it's a safe haven for kids to go to school, to go after school. Like Jabari Parker's dad, Sonny, was in there giving free training to plenty of future pros. He said, fast forward 10 years, 2007, Hales Franciscan, one of the just three schools in America built for African-American males, is close to closing. Jordan drops $5 million and spearheads the effort to keep Hales, which was Gordon Tech, where he went to school, mm-hmm. my buddy here, his rival school, he kept it open. Okay. Spent $5 million of his own money. Another 10 years of 2015, he donates the entire $9 million from the Dominic deal, and I don't know what that is, but to Chicago Charities, $7 million to open medical clinics in North Carolina for at-risk communities. And each year, the Jordan Wings program is still giving full college scholarships, 28 per year. So I'm just putting that out there because you know there's going to be people that are like,
Jordan
wasn't
been.
A good person. He didn't do there this and that.
Been.
We're talking about, let's see, 7 mil, 9 mil, 16, 23, or 21, at least $21 million that he's given in the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even counting, like he said, the small gestures, like mm-hmm. donating his entire salary from the Wizards yeah. to the 9/11 victims. Mm-hmm. So let's put a squash. Let's not have some kind of competition about who's better at giving to charity.
Right.
Let's recognize them all. That's what I'm saying here today. Let's recognize what Michael Jordan's done.
Preach.
Let's recognize what LeBron James has done. Let's recognize this $400,000 in tuition that Derrick Rose is giving out of his own pocket. Derrick Rose is not making the same amount of money that he used to. But there is one thing. By signing a contract this year, he got like $13 million from Adidas just for being on an NBA roster mm-hmm. with a shoe deal. Now, his contract's only 2.4. It's the veteran league minimum.
Right.
But by signing, he like six times of what he would get is what he gets from Adidas from the shoe deal. So he's got the money. But what I'm saying is, like he says here, the economics are different. It's not the same now as what it used to be.
No.
You know, Michael Jordan has all that money now, and it's not because of what he did on the basketball court. It's because of the Jordan brand and everything he's done mm-hmm. to improve that. And, I mean, that Jumpman logos are everywhere. It's taken off.
You know, a guy like Derrick Rose ought to be set for life, but he's never going to have LeBron or Jordan money.
Never. And, you know, with all the injuries that he had, it kind of took away what could have been an opportunity to have LeBron or Jordan money. But, again, never would have been. Even if he was healthy, I don't think it would have been quite the same. But, again, that's – let's recognize everybody. Let's not – especially in a charity thing, let's not try to tear down and say one person's better than the other.
Right.
They're all great for doing what they're doing.
Yeah,
let's
I agree.
Let's put it that way.
And should be recognized as such.
So RoseScholars.com, if you want to learn more about Derrick Rose's thing.
Not to be confused my buddies, with Rhodes Scholars.
Yeah, not Rhodes, Rose. check it out. And I don't know, like I said, I don't know who it's all open to. It might be open to somebody in Kansas. Who knows? Check it out, RoseScholars.com. Maybe you can get some money from Derrick Rose for college. I don't know what it's all going to entail. I didn't read into every single thing. I just read kind of the mission statement on the front of the page. But again, a lot of guys doing good things and they should be recognized for that. I know for me, like I wouldn't be one that would do it for the recognition,
mm-hmm.
but when it's that big of a deal, if you're going to talk about one, talk about the other. Make sure that you're giving equal opportunity to guys that are doing a lot of good things and giving back to the community after, you know, all they've done and the things that go with that. I mean, we got to recognize the good more in this country today.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. It's life right now. So recognizing the good and the bad, we're going to shift gears now to Chiefs training camp, and this is where we'll close. By the way, NFL football opens tonight. Everybody excited? Bears and Ravens preseason football tonight. Hall of Fame game. Kickoff for the preseason opener, 7 o'clock from Tom Benson Hall of Fame Stadium in Canton, Ohio. I won't be able to watch the game, and it's not something I'm going to DVR.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be a game where I would watch like the first two series, and I'd be like, I'm good, got my football fix because I'm not watching the rest of this. Yeah. Lamar Jackson will be playing tonight if you want to see what he looks like, the rookie out of Louisville. He was drafted by the Ravens. Bears under new head coach Matt Nagy, who was the Chiefs offensive coordinator last year. I lied to you off the air when I said that Eric Bieniemy took over offensive coordinator when Doug Peterson left. He actually took it over when Nagy left to go to the Bears, but he is the offensive coordinator for the Chiefs. We're going to hear from him here momentarily. But again, preseason tonight, Matt Nagy making his debut preseason-wise as the coach of the Bears here this evening, and we'll see what Trubisky looks like and those guys for the Bears. A lot of people think the Bears' offense is going to open up because of what they saw with Doug Peterson with the Eagles after coming from the Chiefs and taking over that team. I'm going to say it's not going to be a quick turnaround for the Bears as it was for the Eagles and Doug Peterson making it all the way and winning the Super Bowl. I just don't think the Bears have what they all the things they need to be able to do quite that good. Bears and Ravens tonight, the first preseason game. Chiefs' first preseason game will be next Thursday against the Houston Texans at Arrowhead Stadium. Speaking of the Chiefs, training camp continuing in St. Joseph, Missouri this week. We'll give you some observations from B.J. Kissel. There were two live periods during practice, live sessions in which ball carriers were taken to the ground. Just takes things up another level there. They had Monday and Tuesday were off as far as that's concerned, and they like those live periods because it's kind of like a game situation. You can do a lot more in those live periods and necessary for the guys to be ready to play. It's something they know that's important, particularly defensively, to help establish that mindset they're looking for here this season. Top plays from Wednesday, third-year safety Eric Murray had a nice interception along the sideline to deflect the pass by from quarterback Chad Henne. Marcus Kemp had an attempted to catch the ball on the jump, and Murray got the pick. Undrafted rookie receiver Byron Pringle. There was a lot of talk about Byron Pringle. The K-State undrafted wide receiver continued a solid camp with a couple nice catches in traffic. And then during one-on-one rep on the far field, apparently Steven Nelson is now being called Steve Nelson. Because okay. I've seen a lot of stories that say just Steve Nelson.
Make note of that.
So cornerback Steve Nelson had a fantastic pass breakup on a pass intended on a deep go route for Sammy Watkins. Held with him stride for stride and continues to have a strong camp, Steve Nelson does. Undrafted rookie linebacker Ben Neiman got a look with the first team defense. That's because Reggie Ragland and Ukemi Oligwe are both out still sideline at practice with Ragland with a knee, Oligwe with a foot. Ben Neiman got to run with the first team because of that. He's a former Iowa Hawkeye. And also, the fifth thing, Wednesday's injury update. We're going to go back to the fourth thing and talk extensively about that because people are freaking out. Rookie defensive lineman Derek Nnadi out with an elbow. Receiver Marcus Kemp did leave early after the play that we mentioned due to injuries. He had an ankle injury. Guys who didn't practice at all on Wednesday were Oligwe, Dylan Gordon, Reggie Ragland, Keith Reeser, and Sharkhandrick West still out with a concussion, one of the backup running backs there for the Chiefs. So, The fun thing that we're going to hear all preseason, training camp, leading up to the beginning of the season, and then for 16 games all season, there's going to be this microscope on Patrick Mahomes. He's going to be under that microscope all season. And it's worthy because it's a first-year guy at quarterback. You got rid of a guy that's proven in the league. He hasn't proven as a Super Bowl winner, but he's a proven consistent quarterback in Alex Smith that you got rid of here. You kind of figured that this is as far as he can take us, so we're going to move on, and hopefully Mahomes can take us farther, whatever, and win a Super Bowl for us. Get to the Super Bowl first. Get to the AFC Championship game first. Then get to the Super Bowl. Then win a Super Bowl. This is what you're looking for. That's why you made the quick switch in Mahomes' second year to put him at quarterback. So he's going to be under the microscope. There's going to be a lot of media around him. There's going to be a lot of fans that are wanting him to make the improvements that he needs to make to be that guy that we just talked about to replace Alex Smith. Man, the national media was freaking out yesterday. I mean, this was on the front page of ESPN, like the third story. And it's just like, okay. It's right now, even this morning, the fourth story, the fourth top headline, Chiefs Mahomes beset by interceptions, calls wrong play. Let me preface all this by saying this is training camp. This is where you learn. This is where you can make mistakes. But I'm going to also preface this by saying it's kind of like Dennis Green. We are who we thought they were.
They are who we thought they were.
He is who we thought he was. I mean, if somebody has this illusion of what Patrick Mahomes actually is based on 1 year and one game against the Denver Broncos last year that he played significant minutes in and made one throw that you're just like, what's he doing? Luckily, he didn't get picked. Another throw that could have been a pick six. And it's just like, he is who we thought he was.
Yeah.
Let's kind of chill a little bit. But everybody wants to just go nuts about it and get on him right away. Threw three picks yesterday. Also threw like three or four touchdowns. But he threw three picks in live situations. And there was one situation where, and you're going to hear from Mahomes about it, where he was down on the goal line and he had an open lane to run the touchdown in. Just run it in. You don't have to mess around. Well, he felt like, and you'll hear him say that, it's live, but they can't hit the quarterback. You can't hit the quarterback in practice. So I didn't want a cheap touchdown. And you'll hear him talk about that. But on that play, he decided not to run it in. He decided to pass, and then it's intercepted by backup defensive back Leon McQuay in the end zone. Mm-hmm. And so he makes the wrong – he calls it. What's funny about that is it says calls wrong play on the headline. He didn't call the wrong play. He made the wrong read.
Right.
Like, this is what I don't like about headlines, too, about what some people do. He didn't call the wrong play. He ran the play that was called. He made the wrong read. Mm-hmm. And he didn't make the wrong read, because let's hear from Patrick Mahomes on why he did what he did.
Yeah, I mean, that was on me. I easily could have ran it in. We were in a live period, and I kind of didn't want to hear the defense talking trash to me for running in and because they can't tackle me. And so I threw the ball, but, I mean, you just got to play your game. Play the game how it's supposed to be played. Don't try to force something in because they can't tackle you. And it's just something I just have to learn from, and hopefully in the game I just run it in pretty easy.
So he's like, I didn't make the wrong – basically what he's saying right there is I didn't make the wrong read. I just did the wrong thing.
Right.
He knew that he could have run it in. In a game, he's going to run it in. And that's what you would expect.
Had that been the first drive a week, one, he runs that in for a touchdown.
Yeah. And like, he's trying – he's a young guy. He's trying not to make anybody mad. He's trying to do the things that that put him in a position to be trusted as a leader, to be trusted as a team player, to be trusted as a guy that's not a showboat, basically. Mm-hmm. That's what I get from that quote.
Yeah.
It's like, I didn't do it because I didn't want the defense all on me, like, chump.
We would have got you
cheap touchdown because we can't touch you.
Right.
And it's just like people – and yeah, it's a mistake. There's no doubt about it. And I hope he's telling the truth that – in a game situation, if it's a real game, he's just going to run it in. If that's the read he has and that's what he's got to go with, you got to trust yourself and go with your gut and what you think is the right read. But it's aggravating when you see some stuff like that, calls wrong play. No, he didn't call the wrong play. Now everybody's going around, hey, Patrick Mahomes had a rough day on Wednesday. He called, just calling wrong plays all the time and not right. doing the, got
these,
picked
these
off three
grow.
Times. Yeah, it grows. And he picked off five times in practice. It was three. Right. And everybody goes nuts. But, well, I mean, the observation says that you got a day full of the entire Patrick Mahomes experience.
Yeah.
Perfect way to say it. Here's Eric Bieniemy, the new offensive coordinator for the Chiefs, on Mahomes and the day he had.
He had a few hiccups today, but that's a part of the process. When you're young, you need those hiccups because they become valuable lessons in life. And so would we like for him to be perfect? Yes, we'd like for him to have the highest rating passer quarterback rating ever. But he just needs to be poised under pressure. He's doing a good job of getting the calls out. But at the end of the day, when something happens, don't worry about it. Let's play the next play.
So that's Eric Bieniemy. And he kind of just said, you know, got to be mindful, take care of the football. Do what you're taught in those situations, too. He kind of expanded on that of we don't want to get into situations where we're doing the wrong thing. He says, that's the first thing I said when I came to the sideline. This is Mahomes. He says, I could have run it. And then the coaches said, then just do it. Don't train bad habits.
Fair enough.
That was a play that needed to be made on that one. He needed to run it. Coaches say, don't train bad habits.
Yeah.
Just do it. Just do what you're trained to do. Do the things you need to do. And like I said, this is a guy that has not been a starting quarterback in the NFL. This is the second year in the league.
Right.
I'm not counting the Denver game as him being a starting quarterback in the NFL. That game meant nothing for either team. It didn't mean anything. And so it's just, let's stop freaking out. He's got 7 interceptions in 6 practices. Raise your hand if you didn't think that was going to happen.
I didn't know what was going to happen.
I'm not raising my hand. He's going to have a lot of picks in these training camp practices.
You know,
and we're going to see what he does in the games. Let's see what happens.
Right. You know, and I guess the thing that maybe it illuminates a little bit, particularly I've seen this a lot with Chiefs fans and even a little bit with you guys who are talking on the show, is are the expectations for Mahomes a little bit extreme at this point?
They are.
You know, I mean, even between, and I'm not trying to pick on you guys, but it's easy because we sit here every day and we talk about this stuff. You know, I've heard, you know, you talk about several times about how great this offense is going to be. If the defense would just be decent, this team's going to go in places. you know, you got an unproven quarterback that nobody knows for sure what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Just everybody seems to be assuming that is going to be the next greatest show on turf, and there's the jury's out. You know,
it is.
There's a lot of better things in from the offensive standpoint for Kansas City as far as their outlook and the weapons and the key and the places that they have guys in pieces and positions that could be successful, but. You know, you got a first-year quarterback going to be his first time as a full-time starter, and everybody just seems to be like jumping to this conclusion that the Chiefs are going to be a top-5 offense this year, and hopefully the defense will be good enough that we can make a playoff run. And it's just like, you know, okay, it's good to be optimistic, but are you maybe setting the expectations for a first-year starting quarterback a little bit high?
Yeah, and, well, I mean, the expectations are high because of everything you hear out of camp, too. Everything you hear from the national media, from their perspective.
Right.
From,
but then they turn
the
around
people
and tell
that are
you
in
that,
Kansas
you know,
City.
Mahomes threw 6 interceptions and 30 passes and calls the wrong play.
Yeah, yeah, and so it's just like, what do you get? But, I mean, the potential and on paper, there's no reason that the Chiefs should not have the expectations on offense that you just talked about, that Wade and I have talked about.
Mm-hmm.
On paper, the potential of what they should be is a top-5 offense in the NFL without question. Their weapons are, without question, top-5 in the NFL.
I don't disagree.
Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, now Sammy Watkins is added to that
and
if he's healthy, if he can play.
I completely agree.
And Kareem Hunt, you know, a guy that was just outstanding as a rookie last year. Another thing that not a lot of people are talking about, though, is second-year running backs that have good rookie years don't pan out the same way. They don't have as good a year as the second year.
Not typically.
It's happened plenty of times before. And I don't have that in front of me, but I was reading something the other day that there's like a record of running backs that are really good their rookie year and kind of hit that sophomore slump. They fall off in their second year. So you got to be aware of that and alert for that could possibly happening with Hunt. But you feel a little bit better about Spencer Ware if he's healthy to be that guy coming in for Hunt than he did about Charcandrick West. So you got to go with the flow of all of that and understand that there's, but at the same time, at this point of the season, there's always going to be question marks. Everything's going to look good on paper. And until you go out and do it, you don't really know. I mean, even some of the best teams, the Patriots, Tom Brady's back. Everything looks good on paper, but at some point, Tom Brady is going to show his age. He's going to show that he's too old to be doing this anymore at the same level that he always has. But you know, you don't hear that with the Patriots going into the season. Like, they're talking about, oh, Tom Brady's going to come back because he's old. You know, he's not going to be good because he's getting too old. You won't make that judgment until you see it happen.
Right.
Is what I'm saying. And so a lot of the things you see, and if people know me and have listened to this show before, they know that I'm reserved on Patrick Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a guy that's all gung-ho here thinking that this is the savior of the Kansas City Chiefs,
right,
that he's going to take them to the Super Bowl. Wade feels a little bit better about Patrick Mahomes, no question, than I do. And I think part of that is that hope in your heart that finally we got our own quarterback that we drafted. Right. We took a chance. We moved up to number 10 to pick him. We took that chance and finally drafted our own quarterback instead of getting some retread from the 49ers for the 17th time. You know, and it's like, that's what people are thinking. And I'm excited about that prospect too.
Yeah.
But I also saw Patrick Mahomes with my own two eyes in person and on the TV when he was in college.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot to break the tendencies of a guy like that that has those kind of skills, that kind of mobility, those kind of things that he can do throwing the football. Brett Favre never changed.
Right.
He never changed.
No.
So, but Brett Favre did a lot of great things. He did a lot of bad things.
Mm-hmm.
The way Patrick Mahomes is going to play the game is going to look a lot like Brett Favre.
Yes.
He's not going to be the same player. I'm not going to say he's going to have the same amount of touchdowns, same amount of interceptions. You know, Brett Favre had the most touchdowns, but he also had the most picks.
Right.
And it's just going to be that kind of deal where I just really feel that way. I mean, this is going to be a lot like Brett Favre where the guy's going to make some mistakes. He's going to throw some passes he shouldn't. But
he's
also going to
make
some
throws that
unbelievable
you're gonna go,
throws.
Who does that?
Yeah, exactly. You're going to be like, whoa.
You know.
And God help the defensive back that lets Tyreek Hill buy him.
Yeah, it's over.
Because it's over.
Yeah.
If he has an open place to throw the football, Mahomes is not going to miss Tyreek Hill.
No, and if he does, it won't be very.
And it's gonna be hard to miss Tyreek Hill too because of his speed.
Yeah.
If he stays healthy.
Yeah.
So
you can make up for a lot of if, you know, and
help them all if they let Hill buy him.
The way that Mahomes can throw the ball on the run is really, really impressive to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's just he makes a few plays here and there that you're just like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like. You know, like you said, Brett Favre's a fair comparison. You know, even Favre, when he was an old man in Minnesota, that ball that he threw at the end of that one game to Sidney Rice in the back of the end zone from 55 yards away or what it was on a rope, he just kind of overstepped a guy and just flung it as he went. I mean, who can do that?
Yeah.
Brett Favre can. Yeah. That was about
it. And then you're going to have the play where.
And then you're going to have the one throwing back across the middle late looking toward the
sideline.
You're
going to have Patrick Mahomes rolling out to the right. Tyreek Hill didn't blow by the defender. He's covered. Mm-hmm. He's panicking, looking for somewhere to throw the ball. I got an arm. I'm going to throw it deep. But I'm throwing it over the middle, and it's too late. So you're going to see that.
Sure.
Don't, like, get any illusions that Patrick Mahomes is not going to throw in more interceptions than Alex Smith. I would take it to the bank he's going to have way more interceptions than Alex Smith did. He might have more interceptions this season than Alex Smith did in his entire career as a Chief. I'm going to double-check and see how many Alex Smith threw with the Chiefs.
Because what do you have last year, four?
I think so. I'm going to double-check here, and I'm going to look at his stats here. But, I mean, you just got to understand that this is not going to go the best right off the bat all the time. He had five interceptions last year.
Five.
He's not going to have more than he did in his whole career, but – he had 13 in the last 2 years.
Okay.
I would not be surprised if Patrick Mahomes threw 13 interceptions this year. It wouldn't surprise me.
No. Also,
especially if they're going to open up the offense like they say they will for Patrick Mahomes
to be able to do. Also, wouldn't be surprised if he has 25 touchdown passes.
Yeah. So last year, it was 26-5 for Alex Smith.
If Mahomes goes 25-12 touchdowns to picks this year, you'll take that.
Yeah, if the defense plays well,
and
wakes up at some point. But I mean, I honestly, I would expect Patrick Mahomes to have more touchdowns than Alex Smith and more interceptions.
Well, I think
I could see him
should.
Having 28-12.
Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah,
I mean, because he like you say, he's got the weapons, and at some point he's going to find them.
Right. What you don't want is one of these, 18-20 numbers or something like that.
You don't want Trent Green's first year in Kansas City. I think it was 19-22.
No.
Touchdowns to interceptions. So, it's like you can't have that at all. Actually, it wasn't that many. Wait. Yeah, 17-24. 17 touchdowns, 24 interceptions, Trent Green's first year as a Chiefs starter in 2001. That you don't want that. You don't want Patrick Mahomes to come in here, throw 20 touchdowns and 27 picks. Like
I don't think at that point it matters how good your defense
exactly.
is or not.
Yeah, that's not going to be good no matter what. So, Let's kind of reserve everything. Let's step back a little bit, not freak out about yesterday's performance in training camp. Let's not be ESPN saying he called the wrong play when he just made the wrong read on the correct play call. Personally, he's not calling the plays probably anyway. So,
right.
It's especially in training camp, they're telling him plays to run, they're running them. Andy Reid's doing that right now. Eric Bieniemy can tell me all he wants that he's doing that, but he's not. Andy Reid's doing that in practice is more than likely, telling him the plays to run. Bieniemy might be doing some of that during practice, but let's stop freaking out, all right? 9:58 our time here on the Sports Ticket. Thanks to everybody for tuning in today here on Kitty Country 94.